You're listening to Leafs Lunch with Julia Tucheri and Michael DeStefano on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Shot from an angle. Score! Rebound in front of the goal, and Zach Aston Reese is able to punch it home to Riley. To Willie, a shot, he scores! Willie Nylander with the one-timer! Free, and now the Penguins back in and score! And I think Eric Schalgren would like to have this one back.
And the Penguins come in and win back-to-back. And the Toronto Maple Leafs will now fall to a 7-5 and 3 record.
Freed up from Marner, centering pass. Matthews scores! Pass in and a shot. Stop the rebound in front. They score! And it is Pierre Engvall that finishes the deal. Rebound in front. They score! Jory Benn gets his first Toronto Maple Leaf goal. Time runs out.
Well, the Leafs come back from a multi-goal deficit, down 2-0 in the first period. They have a 3-2 lead, and that would be enough for the Leafs.
Jordy Benn gets to play the hero on Saturday night. What a goal, and what a celebration, and what a weekend in Leafs Nation. Welcome to Leafs Lunch. Julia Tucheri and Mike DeStefano with you. We've got a big show after a big weekend at home for the Leafs. Mike Johnson's going to join us in the next 5 minutes, Daryl Sittler a little bit later in the show. Just what a scene with him over weekend, and Boris Elming. And Mark Crawford will join us at about 1:40 ahead of the Hall of Fame inductions tonight. So another big night in hockey tonight. I've said like three times in the first minute of the show, AB, what a weekend at Scotiabank Arena. The hockey was good. The results on Saturday was good, and I'm going as far as good. But it was really the stuff outside of the hockey games themselves that were so special this weekend at Scotiabank.
Yeah, it was more than hockey. You know, like it really was. And the whole, you know, having Boris Salming be there, you know, Saturday was fantastic. But like Friday, like the first ovation he got, and watching Daryl Sittler, who's going to join us. I can't wait to get his experience being there live, but like watching him raise Boris Salming's hand and watching him kind of break down himself and start to weep, that hit me. Like, that hit me sitting on my couch watching it, just being like, oh my God, Daryl's crying. I'm starting to tear up.
It's like watching your dad cry. It's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
It really had me emotional, and it was a really emotional night for Leafs Nation. Chris Johnson did a great job of teeing it up with us on Friday of just just the magnitude of the moment, and it lived up to all of it. It was really special.
And then how about the decision for the Maple Leafs to start all six Swedish players on the ice to start the game?
There were some serious question marks heading in, mostly in regards to Eric Schalgren getting to start that game, but he was a part of something really special that Sheldon Keefe opted for on Saturday night, which was to start an all-Swedish lineup. And the Leafs did such a good video for younger fans not who might not have all the context as to the importance of Boris Elming. I think after Saturday night, everyone in Leafs Nation has a full understanding of what he did for European hockey players, what he did for the Maple Leafs, and just what a special character he is.
Absolutely. And it all worked out well. Like, the Canucks were in town the night that they had their celebration. Like, I always think of the Vancouver Canucks when I think of, you know, Swedish hockey players, right? Whether it was Naslund, the Sedins, right? You had Olin Edler, like, even now, Elias Pettersson's over there.
Right.
Like, I always think of them. And then I think of what, you know, Nylander here in Toronto, but Matt Sundin for many, many years here with the Maple Leafs. So to have those two teams kind of playing one another. Bruce Boudreau, who's a former teammate of Boris Salming, got to be in attendance for it, which was very nice for him. Probably the only time he was smiling throughout that game, realistically.
Yeah.
Because then once, you know, the second period, I guess, got underway, not a whole lot of smiles out of Brucey Boudreau for that one. But all in all, it was a fantastic weekend to celebrate, you know, the fine moments of hockey, from the Hall of Famers down to Boris Salming, and it'll continue tonight. Got the Hall of Fame, it'll be on TSN tonight. You got the Sedin brothers, and it was so unfortunate that Henrik wasn't able to be there
Yeah, just for the first day.
For the first Hall of Fame day. But still, the Sedins will be there. You've got Louis. You've got Alfredsson. So there's an incredible Swedish connection that was going on this weekend. And, you know, at least picked up 2 points, right? They lost the first game on Friday to the Penguins, but then buckled down after falling down 2-0 to Vancouver, stormed back, and ended up winning the game 3-2. Jordy Benn coming, making his debut, I believe. It was debut, right? He didn't play Friday.
Yeah, his first Leaf game.
Debut as a Leaf and ends up scoring the game-winning goal, and I guess his former team of Vancouver.
Yep.
It was a nice way to kind of put a little bow on the day, getting the victory.
The Leafs have been flipping the script when it comes to always getting scored on by their former players, between Zach Aston-Reese and Jordy Benn. They're flipping the script. The reason Jordy Benn played was because I was melting down about this in the group chat, and it was Saturday night, so you and Steph and Frankie were busy, and I was like, no, I need all of your attention. TJ Brody is a game time decision. We need to unpack this as a group. Drop your dinners and your evening plans. We all need to talk about this. TJ Brody did not play on Saturday night, and the Leafs announced today that he's been placed on the injured reserve with an oblique injury. Just before we bring Mike Johnson in, we'll give the update on Jake Muzzin as well. The Leafs announced today that he's out indefinitely due to a cervical spine injury. He's going to be reevaluated in late February. So not overly promising, the sounds of Jake Muzzin's injury, rather. Pierre LeBrun tweeted his own update about it. He said Muzzin has seen a couple of specialists. It was one of the doctors who suggested they meet again in February to see how he is. But this is LeBrun tweeting. He says, I think it's pretty doubtful, unfortunately, we see Muzzin again this season. What do you think, KB, just before we bring MJ in?
Yeah, I think that makes sense, because this is a pretty serious injury, right? Like, I think it's very serious. You're talking about spines, which can lead to a lot of different things. Why don't we bring him in? Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. MJ, it was a great weekend of celebration, and then we got hit with some kind of hard-hitting news, I guess, this morning with the Jake Muzzin update. You think this is the last time that we see Muzzin play this year?
I mean, I have no idea, AB, but I mean, when I hear cervical spine injury, you know, you're obviously going to err on the side of caution. The fact that they're going to check in 3 months tells you the severity of the injury as it stands currently. And if we remember back to when he was hurt, it was not much of a contact that caused him to be injured. And do you remember the next day how the guys were talking? You know, Jake's got his family to worry about. He's got a long life to live. We just want him to be okay. It's like they knew. It's like the players knew something was up that was more than just some sort of normal hockey injury. So I guess at this point, you almost just think the same kind of thoughts. Like, he's got a long life to live. He's got a family to chase around and kids to raise. And I guess that's where your priority turns, is not really coming back to play hockey this year. And I get the desire to play, because that's what we do. It's what we know. It's how we are wired. But you start hearing cervical spine injuries, and you start seeing months of absences from a pretty innocent looking bit of contact, and you have to start wondering, okay, what's the risk reward of ever playing again? So, you just hope that he gets better so he can live, and then the hockey stuff comes separate. But I would imagine the Leafs have a pretty good idea, and they will be kind of making plans and preparing to play the rest of the season with, unfortunately, Jake Muzzin not going to be available.
Yeah, you hate to speculate about injuries, and more so you hate to see a great character like Jake Muzzin.
You kind of had a sense, though, didn't you?
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, to both of you, when you heard Mitch Marner the following day come out and say, like, if he returns, and saying there's more, you know, to hockey, like he's got a wife and kids outside, that maybe there was something a little more going on with this whole injury than maybe we were led to believe.
Clearly, the guys knew, and even without being doctors, and you know, Mitch and Jake are very close, right?
Yeah.
So like, he would know kind of the history of whatever's going on with Jake Muzzin's body to some degree. So, yeah, that was probably a pretty telltale sign right away. And so now, unfortunately, it's, you know, you give the best care for Jake Muzzin, and you get him healthy as he can get. And then the Leafs, as we do in sports, like, you kind of we move on and try to make or plans that will try to help you be successful given the situation right now, which means, and the situation being, I don't think he plays again this year.
Yeah.
We're with our TSN hockey analyst, Mike Johnson, right now. And in addition to the Jake Muzzin news, more news regarding the Leafs blue line. TJ Brody on the IR with an oblique strain. I think last week, MJ, if we go through our show, there's at least three clips of one of AB and I giving big love to TJ Brody and saying something along the lines of, I don't know what this blue line looks like without TJ Brody. Now it sounds almost like a prophecy. What do you think it looks like? Is it too thin to survive?
Not survive. It might be a little thin to thrive, right? You know, I mean, like, I think the Leafs should be good enough, and I don't know how long TJ Brody's going to be out, but like, he is a guy that Sheldon Keefe puts with other defenders, and he's like their security blanket. He makes it make sense, whether it's Justin Hall kind of struggling initially, whether he's the defensive conscience for Morgan Rielly, who gets off the ice all the time. You know, he's the guy that you feel okay when he's out there, no matter who he's playing with. So you take him out, and now it's going to be what? Liljegren and Rielly, okay. Justin Hall is going to play with somebody else in the second pair. Is that Gio? Giordano, at his age,
probably,
is playing more. Probably, you know, that's more minutes. That's 22 minutes. That's different kind of matchups. And then it becomes with Sandin and Jordy Benn. And Mac Holloway just got called up. Like, Victor Mete. Like, it's not. I mean, I guess it's thank goodness they have Jordy Benn as an experienced 6-7-8 guy, but you don't want to be playing your 6-7-8 guy, not for long stretches. So, yeah, it'll be a challenge, but I think Kyle Dubas will be patrolling the trade options. The way, like, Mike Rielly was just cleared through waivers on Boston. He's a pretty good player, and you know, he makes $3 million with a Muzzin thing. You can afford him. Like, they'll have to explore different things, either like a big splash kind of player, I don't know who that might be, or at least another solid depth guy in the meantime, because you know, you're taking two out of your top six out of a group that strength was its depth, not in its kind of high-end star power.
Well, two out of your top four, really, like Brody and Muzzin, like that's right. two of your big, and really the two defensemen who are like defensive.
The guys that play defense.
Like, yeah, I guess that's also Justin Hall's, like, you could say he's also defensive defenseman, but he's been very up and down this year. I think that's where I look at this blue line now. And if long term, if they are kind of like life after Muzzin at this point this season, you know, I know that Brody didn't hit LTIR, so it's only the IR, so he could be back within, you know, he's out for at least a week, and we'll see after that. But you know, you said it. You said that you think that they probably could survive, but will they thrive? Maybe not. And if this is a team that has aspirations to win a Stanley Cup this year, which I think we all know that is kind of what they have to do, at least have some big time success in the playoffs to keep the ship moving. I mean, they got to go big game hunting and try and find themselves like a steady top four defenseman now that they believe that they have the cap space to make something happen with Muzzin probably not returning. No?
They do, but they don't have to be reckless in chasing that. Like, they do have time. I mean, I think the team is good enough, even though it's been, you know, a challenging start. The team is good enough that they should be okay hanging around the playoff picture, somewhere in the top four. It looks like, you know, the top four of the Atlantic looks pretty familiar now once again. And, you know, wait till you get the guy you want. Don't just go sell the farm to go get, Jacob Chychrun, who hasn't played yet anyways. Right. We could probably just calm down on that conversation as well. He still has not even sniffed the ice, so I don't know. And then the other part, AB, and like, talk to Ottawa. Ottawa, as we mentioned, has tried to get the guy that the Leafs want for about a year, and they have more picks and more prospects than the Leafs do.
Right.
And they haven't been able to find a way to answer that question. So to think that Kyle Dubas to be able to pick up a phone and say, okay, give me, I don't know, whoever it might be.
Connor Murphy. Let's go Connor Murphy.
Connor Murphy. Well, Connor Murphy might be able to be had. He's actually a pretty good defensive defenseman.
I know. So I said it.
But that's not a terrible guy to think of. That's a little bit under the radar. You know, John Klingberg's probably available in Anaheim, but you want to get him close to the deadline. Yeah. So Connor Murphy would be a good pick. But you don't have to go do it today. I mean, you can just be patient. Make sure you get as good of a deal as you can before you pull the trigger.
You mentioned Jordy Benn a little bit earlier in terms of positive stories on the blue line. Got to play hero a little bit on Saturday night with that game-winning goal. One of my favorite parts of the entire way that unfolded was Austin Matthews' reaction. And I feel like he's such a big hype guy for guys that don't often end up on the score sheet when they do. How nice is that as a player when you see a teammate like Benn get into the lineup and get to get a goal like that?
Yeah, that was a great and natural organic reaction. And it says a lot about Ben, who's new to the group, but guys still, you know, kind of embraced him quickly.
Yeah.
And when you get a guy who doesn't score often and has been injured and everything else, and he comes back and scores a goal, like, yeah, the bench reacts. And Austin, like, he looked like Panarin there. Like, he could be a Rockette with that high kick. It was unbelievable. But it was so, you love to see it on the bench. But I thought where you're going, Julia, was he was a star of the weekend. Because did you see what happened when he got the belt after the game?
Yeah, that was awesome, too.
The player of the game belt, and he's like, all right, boys, day off tomorrow, couple of cocktails, we'll get back to work on Monday.
Yeah.
That's my man. That's who I want to hang out with.
Absolutely. But you know what it is about Jordy Ben, too? He actually ended up playing a lot of time up with Morgan Riley, and they played pretty well. Like, the underlying numbers were very favorable when those two were out there on a line. And I know Timothy Liljegren has been up there for the course of the last, you know, week or 2 weeks or so. But, you know, you think Jordy and could get a look up there? You know, he's a guy who does play a defensive game, and he brings that kind of that snarl that this team has lacked, I guess, like, since Muzzin's gone out. And I don't know, I feel like Jordy Ben could be a bit more of a fixture with this lineup here, with all the injuries that this blue line's accruing.
I think, AB, you'll see Sheldon Keefe working hard on the defense. Like, I don't think you'll see anything static for a long time.
Mm.
And depending on what's happening in the game, depending what the score, how who's playing, what's going on, you might see Jordy Ben up there, you might see Liljegren up there. You know what I mean? I think you'll just mix and match depending how people are performing in that game because, you know, I don't know if Jordy Ben, as great as the story that he was, like, I don't know if he can play 23 minutes. You know what I mean? If you get him out of their first pair matchups game after game after game, on the road, back-to-backs, like, it gets taxing. So I would be concerned about that long-term. So I think you'll see Liljegren there, you'll see Sandin. Like, you will see everybody everywhere kind of bouncing around with Morgan Riley and on the third pair. I think they'd like to get Giordano and Hall a bit of a consistent run as the second pair, but the first and third will be a mishmash of everything all the time.
So no Muzzin, no Brody right now, and when Muzzin went down in the preseason and Rasmus Sandin had yet to sign his contract, all the talk was the opportunity that he was letting slide, and now Muzzin is out, Brody's out, and I thought Ben had a better game than Sandin has had all season. Do you think that he's kind of letting an opportunity slip with so much of it available right now?
Yeah, I mean, it seems as though part of the conversation when he was looking for his contract was opportunity-based, not just dollars, right? So, well, it's right in front of you. Like, it is screaming for someone
to begging.
Like, please take control of this. Latch onto it, play well, be solid. You could be a top four guy and answer a question our organization needs, not only for this year, but going forward, like really into like several years into the future. So absolutely, you know, between him and Liljegren, one of those, you know, ideally both of them could kind of step up. And, you know, Rasmus Sandin is a guy when you're around him does not lack confidence at all. Like he really, you know, trusts in his own ability. And I wonder almost sometimes to his own detriment because he's so aggressive with his puck decisions because sometimes, and I'm all, and you guys know, I'm all for making plays, and sometimes when you make enough plays, occasionally you'll make a mistake, and that's okay. You live with those mistakes because of all the good stuff. But you have to know time and place and score and opponent, and sometimes I think he gets so focused in on make a play, always make a play, don't just make a safe decision, that it hurts him, and he gets caught, you know, bumped off the puck or turning a puck over or on the wrong side of the pile or whatever it is. And he's all born because he wants to do something with it. But I think he's just got to find a better balance of, okay, when can I and when should I not? And if he does that, he'll probably put himself in a better spot to be more consistently successful and get Sheldon Keefe's trust. Like, that's what it is for defensemen and really kind of depth forward. Does the coach trust you to play the way he wants you to play? And right now, it's not all the way there for Rasmus Sandin.
Yeah, I remember speaking with Frank Crotto about that, and he played with him when we were at the Marlies, and he said sometimes Sandin can be a little bit of a riverboat gambler, and when you get to the next level, sometimes it's going to bite you, and we've kind of seen that a little bit here over the last couple of weeks. We're chatting with TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnston. Practice line's coming out, and it looks like...
AB, what's my last name?
Oh, my goodness, Johnston. Okay, so full disclosure.
There's actually a story, and I think I might actually be to blame.
100% you are to blame.
Okay, but I didn't say it on the air. This morning I was Googling, I was on your DB, and when I was typing on my computer, I said, oh man, I just typed in Mike Johnson, what a bum move of me.
And it was on
and
my
And then
brain.
AB said,
wow.
Yeah, that is a bum move. And then you buried me for typing it into my laptop in the privacy of our office.
Way worse. I apologize.
I'm not going to let side AB. Come on now.
Mike Johnson with us on the line.
Okay.
No T.
Johnson.
That's right. No T for Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. At least practice, though, Nylander with Matthews, Marner with Tavares. So the big boys remain split up. What did you think of how they played, I guess, Saturday when they did make that split? And, I mean, how imperative do you think now with the state of the blue line, the state of the goaltending, all the injuries that are coming up here, that these guys got to get going, and in particular, like, at 5-on-5 in order for this team to find some success here and go on, like, find some consistent success?
Yeah. I mean, the power play's been good, and, you know, we know some of the underlying numbers are solid, but it's not been what they have done in the past, and it's not been what they need right now going forward. I like Nylander with Matthews. It felt like William, when he's playing well, like, he keeps the puck on the stick a lot, right? Like, he keeps a lot of plays alive in the offensive zone, and I think that Austin needs that right now. Like, Mitch Marner, as great as he is, he wasn't having those kind of long shifts of consecutive possessions and retrievals where Nylander's so strong on it, once he gets it around it, he's hard to take it off of. He might be the strongest puck protector on the team, and maybe him and Austin. So I thought they were fantastic. And then, you know, Mitch and John Tavares had great success in years past as well. So I liked what I saw. Now, I'll be fascinated to see what happens. I'm heading to Pittsburgh for the game tomorrow. Pittsburgh shut down Toronto, like, very tidily in the third period of that game. Toronto didn't really have many chances to even it up. And yet the next night, Pittsburgh just was shredded by Montreal. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't understand what's happening. Is Montreal that good? Is Pittsburgh that bad? Is Toronto, like, why? I don't understand how they can look so good against Toronto one night and so bad against Montreal the next. So I don't know what they're going to get, but it's not like Pittsburgh is locked down good defensively. So we'll see what they can do tomorrow night, because Montreal exposed Pittsburgh in a lot of ways that Toronto could not.
Yeah, I was utterly confused by that series of events as well. But all this to say, with the Leafs struggles, weird situation in the crease, and injuries on defense, 2 goals on Friday, 3 goals on Saturday. How important is it going to be to get the scoring up for this team?
Well, I mean, at some point, don't you want to run off of, like, oh, we won 4-1. Oh, it was 5-2.
God, yeah. Like, I just want that explosion.
Make it feel easy. See all the smiles. Roll the lines. Like, oh, this is the team that was one of the best scoring teams in the league last year. This is the team with the 60-goal scorer and the best right winger in the league. Like, it just hasn't felt like that. It has just felt hard. Everything has felt hard this year, and I think this next stretch, they're going to need to play well enough to have it appear a little bit easier by playing hard, because the goaltending, I think the goaltending will right itself sooner than later. By the end of this upcoming week, I think Murray should be back, and Samsonov will be coming around the corner shortly. But, they just need to make games less taxing by scoring more, and maybe that could start tomorrow night against Pittsburgh.
In conversation with Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, who was also between the benches actually on Friday for probably the most emotional moment this weekend, which was when Boreas Salming got introduced to the Toronto crowd, and we saw Daryl Sittler and Matt Sundin helping him raise his arms to acknowledge the crowd. Like, you were there and had a really, like, a front row view, quite literally. I mean, what emotions did that kind of bring out for you in that moment?
It was so sad and touching. I mean, I know I've been around Daryl last few days. We've had some conversations, and he can't talk about Boria for 3 seconds without getting, you know, teary. Mm. And to see Daryl come out and was welling up and crying before he even stepped on the ice, just like knowing that. And I guess I to hear the ovation and to feel the love kind of pour down from the crowd, and most of the crowd who probably don't know Boreas Salming, didn't watch him play, like, didn't, you know, don't have firsthand experience with him, but recognize his importance to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I thought it was beautiful to see Matt on one side of him, a guy that would have, you know, followed in the path that Boria blazed for all those Swedish players, and a very tough path that he had to go through as he was challenged in many ways to play in the NHL. And then to see Daryl on the other side of him and to see the way that the players from the 70s and 80s, and I think because they play together more, they don't get traded as often, like they're able to be around each other longer, and how real and deep that connection is. That's not we like each other because we're teammates. That's like we love each other like we're brothers.
Right.
And they're 70 years old, and it's been 35, 40 years since they played hockey together, and it's still so real and so deep. And I was having a hard time not crying, thinking, okay, I'm going to come on air here, and I'm going to be a bit of a mess because it was that palpable. It was so real, and everyone could feel it. It was beautiful, but it was sad and touching. And to see Borya fight to raise his hand, and the combination smile, which you could see coming through his face, as well as the tears. It was just gut wrenching and lovely. So credit the Leafs and Daryl and everyone for being out there and having him have that experience, because it's one him and his family won't forget.
Yeah, it's strange. Like, it was amazing and gut wrenching at the same time.
Yeah,
like it's rarely do you have those two feelings colliding together.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of what made it such like a beautiful moment, realistically, because I was sitting on my couch tearing up just along with everybody else. So but it was nice that he was able to be here for such a monumentous weekend for Swedish hockey, and then for the man who made it all happen to be here and see kind of the fruits of his labor, I guess, kind of unfolding. Yeah. I think was just outstanding.
Sheldon Keefe on the Saturday night, 5 Swedish starters. Like, come
absolutely.
On. Like,
six?
Talk about
six?
Reading the room. Six, I guess the goalie, right. It's all six of them. It's one that they have even six guys to play is pretty solid. But I thought that was awesome. Like, good on him. Who cares about lines? Like, just have, like, that's the moment that matters. And, I thought that was really well done by Sheldon.
All right, what was more egregious, me calling you Mike Johnston or Frankie totally aging you on Friday, asking if Borya Salming was, like, in your heyday?
Yeah, was he my hero growing up? I'm like, dude, I was not even born when he was playing. I'm not going to lie to you.
It was me.
It's 100% you. We talk to each other 500 times. My name is fonted on the show all day long.
It's actually in front of us right now.
I'm on the rundown. I know Steph knows how to spell it. So it's all you. I give Frankie a pass because he wore 20 beautifully after me. You get no passes here, AB. None whatsoever.
He's still holding earbud gate over me, aren't you, Gianni?
Oh, listen. This is just more fuel to the earbud wax gate fire.
I don't blame you for that one. The earwax is offside. I would hold that one for a long time.
Honestly, I am guilty on both counts. I'm definitely guilty on both counts. Gianni, appreciate taking time as always, pal. We'll chat again next week.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
All right. There he goes. Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst.
That is so funny because, like, how often do I misspell things when I throw them into Google? And I happened to mention to you, I said, well, I can't believe it.
And it was in the back of my head, apparently.
I'm sorry. I cursed you.
Because what he called me out on, it's
I will
like,
note the fact that you were ready to absolutely
totally
throw
fault.
Me under the bus and let the wheels hit me in the sternum.
Yeah. Hey, we're both going down. We're going down together, all right? We're teammates. One of us lose, we both take the L.
Okay. Right? It's like the Titanic.
That's right.
I love it.
That's right. I'm not giving anything up. No way.
You're hilarious.
We're either both going to...
I agree.
Sink with the ship?
Yep.
No. It was the piece of driftwood, which she totally could have let him be on. Let's be honest here.
Oh, yeah.
There
she was
so
hanging out on that
there.
Door.
Oh, brutal.
She was looking to get rid of him at that point, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. A little bit later on, though, he was talking about Daryl Sittler, and he's going to join us at 1:20. And you know, we'll see, I guess, the emotions of him talking about Borya Salming when he does join us at 1:20. So I'm really excited to chat with him. And then Mark Crawford, who coached the Sedin Twins, will also join us at 1:40. So a pretty good show coming up. On the other side, let's chat a little bit about these lines and about the state of the blue line here with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm Mike DiStefano with Julia Tesheri. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
What's the emotion like after that? We saw your reaction, obviously. I mean, it doesn't happen too often, so I don't really know what to do. But thank God Maddie came, and I was just like, all right, here's a hug.
Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. That was Jordy Benn talking about the goal that he scored on Saturday night. The winner. The game-winning goal and the celebration that ensued, which was absolutely incredible. I heard Matt Cause this morning on First Up talking about that scene in Talladega Nights where he wins his first race and doesn't know what to do with his hands.
What do I do with my hands?
Yeah, it was another one of those moments. Yeah, so he was lucky to find a hug.
That's exactly what I was like. I don't know what to do. Oh, good, Matt.
Thank God there's a hug
over
there.
Let's go. Matthews. You know, he had a really good game, though. You know, for a guy who hasn't played all season, came in, had a great debut, ended up on the top line, I guess, with Morgan Riley playing some pretty solid minutes. Like, I was looking, their shot share was very high. They had, like, expected goals in the 70 percentile range. Like, a real, real solid performance out of Jordy Benn. And, you know, kind of what we were talking about, too, he brings that snarl, which is something that's been lacking on that blue line.
I feel like there's usually at least one guy on that blue line that's kind of, like, more of a lunch pail sixth or seventh guy, whether it's Bogosian or... maybe Labushkin didn't totally fit that criteria from last year, but
he did.
But
though.
He
could lay the boom.
Yeah,
like,
I just meant that he was a little bit higher in their lineup, in sixth or seventh.
Yep. Yeah.
But I think he's going to be more of a fixture, AB, than maybe we anticipated coming into the year.
I believe that is true. Like, he came into the season. I mean, we think about
it. And maybe you and I, because maybe other people looked at this and thought Jamie Benn was going to be Jordy Benn rather was going to be a piece of the blue line. So
who could have possibly thought that, though? Like, really,
Liam Hamm.
Well, okay, so
that's why I have to specify this, because this was a long-standing argument.
so one gentleman in your life thought that.
That's why I have to specify.
But here's how could he think about that? Because you think about coming into the year, right? The blue line looked as such. You had Brody and Riley.
Yep.
Right, and then you had Muzzin and Hall.
Yep.
And then you had Geo, and then there was going to be
one of Sandin, Liljegren, or
Hall, right? So you're thinking, like, Sandin or Liljegren, right? So you, like, there were seven NHL quality defensemen there, and then they went and signed Mete and Jordy Benn. So it's like, there might have to be a couple of injuries for this guy to get into the lineup, right? Like, it's not like he was going to factor, I didn't believe he was going to factor into the rotation unless they carried eight defensemen with them. And at the time, we didn't, like, they couldn't carry any extras with them on their team, right? Based on how the cap situation was. So I did not anticipate him being a staple in this lineup. And I still don't know if he will become a staple. Like, it's one game.
I don't know either.
We can't sit here and say, like, oh, he's the savior.
But he's been in the tiny sample size that we saw from him.
Yes, in that one game.
Yeah.
Solid. But he does bring that element that has been lacking on this blue line.
That Hall doesn't bring, that Sandin doesn't bring, that Liljegren doesn't bring. And those, to me, are his... I think he could be, on any given night, just as productive as any one of those guys.
It's just a matter of, like, how long can he be productive like that for? Like, Johnny was right, where he's like, you know, the guy's 35 years old. He hasn't played a whole lot of hockey, you know, the last couple of years.
I didn't,
like,
realize he was 35 also. No visor, pretty nails, too. Always like to have that in the mix.
Yeah, if you're rocking no visor, like, you just have...
That has to be a stat. No visor per
stones.
Roster or something like
the
that.
The steelest of
because
stones.
It does provide a little bit of nails to your lineup.
100%. And, like, that's what he is, right? 6'2", 200 pounds. The guy can go out there. He can hit you. But is he going to be able to play, like, 20 minutes a night to be up on a pairing with Morgan Riley?
Probably not.
But he's somebody who you can kind of filter in. You know, we've seen it all season long where if this team needs a little bit more meat and potatoes, if they're going up against the you know, Philly, or they were going up against Boston, or they were going up against Winnipeg, he would change the lineup according to the opponent to make sure that they had those guys, right? So, like, you would see Simmons filter into a game against Winnipeg and against Philly and whatnot. So I can see Jordy Benn definitely being one of those guys when everyone's healthy. But right now, like, they need him, right? Like, he's one of the top six defensemen that are healthy on this team, right? TJ Brody's out for a week now at minimum with an oblique strain. He's on the IR. We know that Muzzin's not going to be back for a very long time. He's going to be reevaluated in February.
Yeah.
So at least to February, we know that there's no Jake Muzzin.
Yeah, and a note on that is that it kind of ties into the trade deadline this year is March 3rd. So February seems like a fairly convenient late February Seems like a fairly convenient time to have that reevaluation.
So I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, though, because when you look at the blue line as constructed, as you mentioned when we were having the chat Mike Johnson, you know, you had noted that we had been talking previously about how if TJ Brody were to go down, what would this blue line look like?
Well, we're looking at it right now. It looks like Riley Benn, Geo Hall, and Sandin Liljegren.
Right.
What do you think? It's the third pairing that I'm looking at and thinking, because I guess in the Leafs, what's working for them right now is TJ Brody's just on the IR. Like, he can be activated
in a week
by Saturday. So that's all fine and dandy, hopefully, as long as that goes according to plan. So maybe this isn't concerning long term.
The thing with obliques, and I remember Frankie talking about this too, is like they can sometimes linger.
Yeah.
Which you really hope is not the case for a blue liner that needs his mobility when he's out there to be as effective as he can be. So, like, that's somewhat of a concern. It's even, like, if he returns and isn't at 100%, that mobility could really kind of cost him. But, you know, that being said, I think that the Maple Leafs, despite... I think they do need to make a move to address this blue line.
I think so, too. But I have a hard time sitting here and saying that. Like, you brought up an interesting name, but I have a hard time sitting here and saying that when I look around the league and the landscape and I think to myself, I just don't know... I don't know who's going to move the needle right now for the Leafs.
Connor Murphy's a name that I've brought up, and like I believe is a guy who I think could help this team. Like, I've brought his name up a bunch of times. You know, like last year I wanted them to bring him in at the trade deadline. He was kind of that top four defenseman that I was looking at. They opted to go with Giordano, and that's worked out well. And obviously he re-signed at a much cheaper rate. So that's worked out for Toronto. But, you know, I think he's someone who's got three more years left on his deal in the $4 million range. He can play the right side. He's big. He's physical. Hits, block shots. Like, he can do a lot of those things that Jake Muzzin does, but he plays the right side. And I think that would be a perfect complement next to Morgan Riley. And then that would allow, once you get TJ Brody back, to play with Justin Hall, right? Be the babysitter to Justin Hall, and they can flourish together like they've done so far this season. And then you've got Giordano with one of, you know, Sandin Liljegren. I don't know if you may have to part with one of those guys to get a Connor Murphy, I suppose. But, you know, like that is the type of player who I think the Maple Leafs do need at the end of the day. Someone who you can chuck into the top four. Like, Ethan Bear was a name where Leaf fans were sitting there saying, oh, you couldn't have got Ethan Bear. Like, he's better than Justin Hall. It's like, I mean, what, he can't, he's not going to do a whole
lot
for you.
He's not going to move the needle.
He's not going to move the needle. I think the Leafs at this point, the state of their blue line, need someone who can move the needle where if they do sustain an injury to their blue line, they can get past it. Like, look at some of the top teams in the NHL, right? Go look at Colorado and how that blue line is constructed. If Cale Makar goes down, I think they're still good.
Yep.
Like, he's a great player, don't get me wrong, and it's not like he's not replaceable.
Wouldn't mind one of those.
Absolutely. But who's next to him? You got Devon Toews who could step up. You've got Bo Byram who could step up. You've got Josh Manson who can play some pretty effective. Sammy Girard's on their third line who can easily step up in his place and give them a little bit of offense. And like, so there's, you know, Colorado's one team. You can move over to Tampa Bay, another top team in the NHL, right? Victor Hedman goes down, but they got Mikhail Sergachev who can step up and play some meaningful minutes. Like, they've got a bunch of guys. Vegas. Pietrangelo goes down. Oh, here's Alec Martinez who can step up and still be a defensive presence in the back.
The thing is, the thought process.
The Leafs don't have that guy.
Yeah,
if Brody goes down.
Do you think that they thought they did though? Like, if it, well, it Muzzin, was like Muzzin goes Muzzin, down, but we got Brody, and oh wait, now Brody's down.
Well, that's
too.
It, right? So they could. They maybe thought they could afford the one hit, but can they afford a second hit?
Exactly.
Is the question, and the answer is no. But with the health. I don't want to say problems, but like last year there were some health issues with Jake Muzzin.
So maybe it was a stretch to think that.
Date back to the bubble. Like, the guy took a pretty bad injury against Columbus and was injured, got injured again in the series against Montreal, and then last year missed a whole bunch of time with the concussion. So like, there is a long history of injuries with that guy. So you have to think, okay, there's a chance that at some point we could be without Jake Muzzin. Are we okay with the blue line constructed without him? And I think they probably thought to themselves, we got Gio, we got Sandin. You know, if Sandin can take a step here like we think, maybe we could be all right. He hasn't taken that step.
No.
So I think now they're sitting here saying, okay, we're a little bit light.
Yeah.
We're a little thin on the blue line. I believe they should probably go out and make a move to address it. Preferably someone on the right side. It's got a little snarl, got some size to it. Connor Murphy was a guy who I brought up because I've looked into it a little bit, and I think he'd be somebody. Andrew Peak is another player, a young guy out in Columbus, who I think would be great, and that team's kind of floundering.
Yeah.
So, like, you could go out and maybe grab yourself an Andrew Peak. But one of those players, I think, would be very beneficial for this Leafs blue line. Does it happen right away? That I'm not sure, but I think at some point you got to bolster it, because as constructed, I don't see that as a blue line that can win a Stanley Cup.
No, not right now.
And that's what the goal is of this season.
Yeah.
So you got to do whatever you got to do to make that possible, make that a reality. Have me look at this blue line on paper and say, yeah, I can see them winning a cup, because right now I don't.
No. And again, it's hard to predict injuries, but with Muzzin, there probably was some writing on the wall this year.
Well, it's like the goaltending.
Yeah.
Right? Like, very similar. I mean, maybe we can come back and talk about that decision, but the decision to go to Schalke.
Yeah, we haven't even chatted about that.
Well, I think we got to take a break. So why don't we take a break, come back, and we can get into that decision, maybe talk a little bit about the game itself. But that was something that Saturday I woke up, I was like, oh, okay, interesting.
Totally.
So we can break that down. Daryl Sittler going to join us also at 1:20. Mark Crawford at 1:40. Jam-packed second hour of the show. I'm Mike DiStefano with Julia Teixeira. Listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
I love when fans are able to, you know, really put their egos aside and retract their statements. And the Devils did that with Lindy Ruff. Leafs Lunch is brought to you by Vanilla Visa prepaid cards available at Petro-Canada, the perfect gift for any occasion. We remember the Fire Lindy chants at the beginning of the season.
They made no sense.
I understand that Devils fans had become impatient because it felt like year after year after year it was going to be they're going to take a step. Oh, I'm not saying they weren't patient with the season, but they had lost their patience. And now they beg for Lindy's forgiveness, because they are rolling right now.
They are rolling, and they're like the number one team in the league right now. They've won nine in a row. Yeah, they are going to be here Thursday. Who would have thought that, you know, this stretch of games, you would have been looking at that game on Thursday, like at the beginning of the year, and being like, oof, you got the Devils coming into town? That's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Actually, are they going to be in New Jersey? They'll probably be in New Jersey, because they're in Pittsburgh on Tuesday. I'll have to double check.
No, it's home Thursday. I think I was looking at tickets for the game, so Thursday.
So they're going to be Thursday, so they're going to be taking on Jersey in Jersey. Yeah, it's going to be. That's a tough game. That's a really tough game. But I don't quite understand. Like, I didn't understand the Fire Lindy chants when they happened.
No, me neither.
But now they're sitting here and they're loving Lindy.
Yeah, they are, and I don't blame them. Do we want to play the audio that the question he answered about those chants after the game? He had a great response.
They chanted "Sorry, Lindy" tonight. Your reaction to that?
You know what's funny is that they asked the coaches that after the game, and there's not a single coach that heard that, including me. I said, I accept the apology. Someday, us and the fans are going to sit down and have a beer and laugh about that one.
Wasn't that nice? They could all sit down and laugh about it one day.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet he's not laughing still about the Brett Hull thing. But yeah.
No, not about that. But otherwise.
But otherwise they're pretty
all
good.
Hee hee and ho ho. Hall of Fame weekend continued, AB.
Mm-hmm.
Continues tonight with the induction. I'm actually going. It's going to be my first Hall of Fame induction.
That's
in
pretty
real
cool.
Life.
That's pretty cool.
Also very cool over the weekend, Hall of Fame game. We saw Jason Spezza taking shots on Samsonov ahead of practice on Friday at Scotiabank when Luke and I were there for morning skate.
Uh-huh.
He was getting Samsonov loose, but he was also definitely gearing up for the Hall of Fame game. I wasn't there yesterday, but from what I saw online, apparently he got the loudest reception out of anyone else at the Hall of Fame game. Jason Spezza, he's so beloved in this city.
Which is interesting, like, I guess he's the most recent Leaf to play here.
Yeah,
like, so I guess that makes sense. But like over, like Sundin, like over.
I know
some of these legends.
I know he just became so quickly beloved here. He was asked, I don't know, probably a jest. I saw it on Twitter after the fact. If he wanted to, if Kyle Dubas called him up, and I don't know if Kyle would have to call him. He could probably just like walk across the hallway and ask him in his office if he'd like to rejoin the Maple Leafs at some point this season. And Spezza's only response was, watch me out there.
And apparently it looked pretty good. Who knows? Did you imagine Jason Spezza coming back out of retirement? I don't.
For the playoffs?
Could you imagine if that actually
happened?
He wins
a cup? Whew.
He just comes back, and they're just like, yeah, we're going to sign Spezza. Like, what's the last? I think you have to be with by, what, by the trade deadline, I think you have to sign by in order to be eligible to play in the playoffs, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So I think that, yeah, so it would have to happen
there.
Yeah, I
guess that has to be your set roster.
That would be hilarious if we actually do get that kind of notification. What
if, like, I got that notification, my head would fall off. I'd be so excited.
So we put out a poll question.
Who else has done that?
What, come out of retirement?
Fisher.
Fisher came back a couple years ago with Nashville. He came. It didn't go all
too
well.
No, it didn't.
I don't remember that going well there. I mean, technically Sundin. Like,
right.
Sundin signed,
yeah,
mid-season in Vancouver. And it didn't go very well. They ended up losing, I think, the first or second round. And that was, like, the last we saw of Matt Sundin. But he was somebody. I remember I was on vacation. And I remember that signing kind of coming down. And me and my uncle, I think it was in Florida, were going wild about it.
Yeah, like, I guess Lemieux did it. LeFleur did it. Now that I'm looking back here, when Lemieux had cancer and then he came back after the
fact. that's like a different situation.
Yeah.
That's
did
more
he retire,
of like an
though?
Injury type of thing. Actually, I don't remember.
I think he did retire and come back.
And then
he came back
and played. But
I don't know. Jason Spezza watch has begun with all the guys headed to the press box with injuries. That's where we're at right now in terms of the injuries. Can he play defense? I don't know.
Well, I mean, Luongo could play forward. We figured that one out yesterday.
That was crazy, too. We didn't get to have that conversation with Mike Johnson, but Duffy and Luongo were going back and forth about Luongo apparently honing his player skills. We've heard all week about how much work Luongo puts into his game, how much preparation. Apparently also sniper, and he hit the gritty after he scored.
That was hilarious. But you think about it, makes some sense, right? Like, he's the director of goaltending with Florida now, right? Like,
you got to be able to rip shots.
Well, he's out there probably practicing with his goaltenders and like
point.
Taking shots on them, right? So he's been doing this now for a couple of years where he's just literally sniping on like Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, like, he's probably got a half decent shot at this point. So,
yeah.
I wasn't like, I guess I was a little surprised. Like, you're talking about a Hall of Fame goaltender saying, I want to play out.
Different too, yeah.
It's funny though, because any goaltender I've ever, like, any ice hockey goaltender that I've ever played ball hockey with, never want to play net. They always want to come out and play forward.
That's true, actually.
And I feel like it's the same for retired goalies. Like, once they hang up the pads, they never want to put those things back on again.
No.
Because
I'm
pretty sure, Steph, correct me if I'm wrong, Noodles, I believe, he's never strapped the pads back on after being, after retiring, no?
He did play a tournament overseas one year, and he absolutely hated every minute of it.
And now,
hated.
Just like, no, not happening.
No, like, I've never actually seen him play, like, since we've been married, I've never seen him play goal.
That is hilarious.
Never. Yes. I've seen him skate. And I'm still, like, pretty impressed at how good of a skater he is. For some reason, I just expected him to... I don't know. I just expected the goalie to not be the greatest skater. But he's an unreal skater.
Wow.
Yeah, I could see it.
So that's why when I saw Louis, like, just playing forward, I was like, okay, I could see this.
Ripping
I would
it.
Love to see a forward, though, play net.
Yeah.
That would be something. Do you think we could try and get, like, imagine O-Dog in the goal?
No.
No, we could not. I'm going to ask if he's ever actually played.
We get to talk to him tomorrow.
Yeah.
We get the O-Dog on.
There's a very special announcement on Overdrive today.
Ooh. Yes, at 4 p.m.
4 o'clock. I would encourage our listeners to stay tuned for that. They're going to want to hear this.
You're going to want to hear this. I'm also going to get dragged today for sure.
Oh, yeah.
The picks didn't go very well for Team Luke's Brothers this weekend.
No.
So that could be the announcement at 4 o'clock. Maybe I'm on waivers
officially.
Maybe
you're fired.
I potentially on waivers, maybe just cut outright. I don't know. You have to tune in at 4 to see exactly what the situation is there. The Air Canada Fan Flight Contest with TSN 1050 is your chance to see the Maple Leafs in Nashville this season. Listen to First Up every weekday for the Fan Flight keyword of the day. If you hear it, be sure to tune into Overdrive that same day. When you hear the cue to call, the first caller through to 416-870-1050 with the correct keyword wins a Google Nest Mini and also qualifies for the grand prize draw, an Air Canada Fan Flight trip for forward to Nashville to see the Maple Leafs in action. For full contest details, head to tsn1050.ca. Big second hour of the show coming up. We've got Daryl Sittler who's going to join us at 1:20, and then Mark Crawford also going to join us at 1:40. I'm Mike DiStefano with Julia Teixeira. You listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.